However, there is a different geometry, one that we didn't learn because it's actually relatively new. It was actually demonstrated in 1983 by a man by the name of Benoit Mandelbrot, who worked for IBM. This new geometry called fractal geometry was first discovered around the late 1700s by a mathematician by the name of Julia. And the issue about this is it is a mathematics that involves an iterated equation. That means an equation where you solve the equation and then you take the result of the equation and reintroduce it to the equation and solve it again. And then take that result, reintroduce it back into the original equation and solve it again. And onward and onward and onward. So to actually get an image of what a fractal geometry structure would look like, you actually have to repeat this iterated equation 1 or 2 or 3 million times and plot the data before you can see what was going on. Well, when Julia imagined this information back in the late 1700s, the concept of actually repeating the equation a million times was not humanly possible. It would take years to do that. So Julia left the idea saying that it seemed like a very interesting possibility, tried to sketch out what it might represent, but really had no way of seeing what fractal geometry would provide for. However, as I said, it was up to Mandelbrot in 1983 because working for IBM, he had access to the supercomputers of the time. And he took the equations of Julia and put it into the supercomputer and then was able to realize the geometry that Julia could only imagine. And when it was realized, it was found to be providing of magnificent, mind-boggling images. Fractal images are exquisitely beautiful, ornate, and totally complex. And these images reflect some of the images of nature. And so when you make this iterated equation, basically what you do, as I said, is take the conclusion of the equation and reintroduce it back into the equation and repeat it again. Let me give you an idea of what that equation actually might mean. Very many of you are familiar with the concept of this kind of equation. Take a line, cut it in half. Take one of the halves, cut it in half. Take one of those halves and cut in it half. And what you can see is this, that every time you cut the line in half, you take one of the halves and then take that, introduce it back into the equation, which is cut the line in half. And then the conclusion is you have these two half lines and then you take one of those half lines, reintroduce it back into the equation. And what you can see is an iterated equation. The question is, how many times can you do this? And the answer is infinitely. Because as the line gets smaller, if you magnify it, you can still cut it again. And every time it gets smaller, just magnify it more and more. And every time you magnify the line, you can keep cutting it in half. And this process can go on infinitely. So the interesting thing about this mathematics is that it repeats itself continuously at higher and lower levels of organization. But here's the beauty of fractals. When you do fractal geometry, you start to find that the images repeat themselves over and over again at higher and lower levels of organization. So in the infinite progression or regression of the equation, an image will appear in the geometry that will then later again reappear at another level of the organization. And what was also profoundly interesting about fractal geometry, it was found that you could actually put in mathematical numbers into the equation, and when you express the geometry in the computer, you would see the images would turn out resembling living organisms, trees, invertebrate organisms. Actually, you could even put numbers into a fractal equation and get a mountain with clouds in it. And what this really revealed is that the nature of the universe that we live in can be defined by fractal geometry. And yet, remembering a very important fact, that the images in fractal geometry repeat themselves over and over and over again. So fractal geometry actually supports an age-old metaphysical concept called as is above, so it is below. Meaning that if nature is fractal in its imagery, then the same structures will repeat themselves at higher and lower levels of the biosphere. And this is exactly what I started to find when I started studying the nature of cells. Because I started to realize that the eukaryotic cells, the cells that make up the human, when I looked at them, had all the traits and characteristics and behaviors of the human itself. That the community of cells that make the human is actually an image of the original cell. So it became easy to see that the structure of the cell and the structure of the human were fractal images of each other. This became very helpful and very instructive because when something in the human was very difficult to understand how it occurred, you could look at the simpler version, the cell, see how the cell carried out some particular activity, and then go back to the human and then understand within the human how that process was carried out as well. So it becomes very instructive. And then we start to find, but it repeats itself over and over again. So now I started to recognize this. The human is made in the image of the cell. And again, this is what I brought about in the very first part of the presentation, where I said that all the functions and characters of a human are already present in every cell. So as the human evolved, it represented, in one sense, the highest level of organization of individual cells into a community. And then as humans started to appear, they actually represented the new level of the cell. And as humans started to populate the world, they started to form communities just as the single cells way back in evolution did. And then communities of humans started to organize themselves to support for their survival. And interestingly enough, when human society started to come together, the humans organized themselves into the community in much the same manner that the cells organized themselves into the community that formed the human. But communities of human cells, in the sense that we are cells in a larger structure, required the same things that the cells did for their life. So all of a sudden we started to find that the organizations and functions of human society are a reflection of the organizations and functions of the cells in their society. Whatever jobs a human is doing in humanity, a cell is doing the same job in your human body. That the organizations of the body, the organizations of humanity, were parallels to each other. They were self-similar to each other. And this also gave us some insight then that said, is the evolution that we're facing right now understandable? When we go back to conventional belief, that's where we deal with Darwinian theory. And Darwinian theory said, no, evolution is based on random processes. And as a result, we have no idea what the future bodes. That humans got here just through accidents themselves. So there's no real meaning for ourselves even being here. And unfortunately, this is the idea that science has promoted. So while the church separated us from nature, saying that we were put on top of nature by God and we can do whatever we want in nature because we're independent of it, conventional biology gave us a similar idea, that we came from nature totally by accident with no purpose or no intention, and that we actually represent just some genomic dice that were shaken, and we are the conclusions of this gamble, and yet we're not really connected to the world. And so in our conventional world, we see ourselves still as a separate entity from the environment that we live in. However, the new biology involved with this membrane understanding and the integration of organisms in the biosphere, incorporating themselves in communities with other living organisms, reveals that the entire biosphere is one living organism. We were never separated from that organism. We go back to Lamarck, who said that we are actually designed by our interaction with the environment that we live in. So humans were not an accident of genetic probability. Humans were actually shaped by the environment. And the relevance about that says that we are not an accident or an add-on to the environment. We are a constituent part of that environment. In fact, we are made in the image of that environment. How can I say that in a scientific surety? And the answer is very simple. For if we go backwards in time, we'll remember this precise fact, that the human body is made out of proteins, and the proteins form the machinery. But then remember that life was the result of an environmental signal that would complement the protein, so that when the signal joins to the protein would engage in a biological functional behavior such as physiology. Well, what's the relevance of that understanding is simply this. What if you have a protein that doesn't respond to the environment? Then that protein wouldn't really have any function. And then all of a sudden you recognize, but all of the proteins in your body do respond to signals of the environment. Then the physical structure of your body, the proteins, is a complement to the environment in which it evolved. Why is this relevant? Because if we're made in the image of the environment, then think about what we're doing to the environment. As we destroy the environment, we destroy the image that provided for us. As we destroy the environment, we begin to destroy ourselves. And this is exactly what science has recognized, that we are now deep into the sixth mass extinction. We have so altered the environment that the environment can really not sustain life the way it has been carried out for millennia. As a result, We ourselves are now in jeopardy of extinction. And the way around this problem is to change our perceptions of life, is to change our beliefs, to recognize we are not victims of random mutations and got here by total accident, that we are biological organisms with an intelligence enough to respond to the environment to adjust and shape who we are. And that when we go forward into the future, we don't have to do so blindly, for the simple reason is this. We now recognize through the basis of fractal geometry that nature is built on this geometry. And why should I invoke that even in biology in the first place? And this comes the exciting part. Well, we saw that nature had fractal imagery. There was no apparent reason as to why nature would be fractal. But when we go back to that membrane, so now we put all the pieces together, and we recognize that the membrane contains the awareness, and that the more membrane surface area you have, the greater awareness, the greater the evolution, and we start to model surface area, then we recognize an important mathematical fact. If you're trying to put two-dimensional surface area into a three-dimensional structure, it is required that the geometry that you use for this process be fractal geometry. Euclidean geometry cannot handle that kind of structure in space. That fractal geometry specifically handles this. So basically it says, if evolution is the expansion of awareness, then the mathematics responsible for the geometry of that expansion must be fractal, and that nature then would reflect the fractal character, and as a result, that's how we can sit down and say, here's a human cell, you understand how it works, now you understand how the human works. Here's human society. If you understand the nature of the human body, you will have rules to how to live in society. Think about it this way. Underneath your skin are 50 trillion cells living in harmony in a very closed environment. These cells are very intelligent. It's very interesting because scientists and humans have always looked down at everything less than human as not being intelligent. And that's our hubris, and yet it's going to cost us a lot for this very simple reason. You must stop long enough to recognize this, that the human, with all of its innate capabilities and just marvelous physiology and all the mechanisms of our systems, were designed by cells. It's cells that have that intelligence. It's cells that created the technology. Cells created us. It is time we honored that intelligence. And why is it relevant? Because if you can look inside the body and see all those trillions of cells living in harmony, recognize this, every cell is a sentient being just like every one of us is. Every cell lives in a community and has a job to support that community. There are rules and regulation. Cells get paid for what they do. Cells get services. Yes, there's health care by the immune system. The garbage is taken out by the excretory system. The digestive system delivers the food. All of this is covered. There's a society inside our body that can thrive when we're in health, that consists of trillions of individuals, and yet the few billion people on this planet, on the entire surfaces of the planet, are so out of balance that they're destroying the environment. It really returns us to the age of mystical belief that said, the answers lie within. And this is what exactly fractal geometry is trying to tell us. If you want to understand how to structure a human population with a few billion people on this planet, the answers to that lie under our skin. Because if we look at the politics and the dynamics of the cells inside our body, the cells that form this magnificent technology community, this organism which does things that even humans aren't able to do yet, we would study these cells, we would get an understanding of how we can live on the planet. And why this is interesting, again, is that the iteration of the equation requires that the structures in nature iterate or repeat themselves as well in self-similar fashion. And so when we understand this, and we can say this, yes, humans are evolving, human civilization is evolving. Are we evolving randomly according to Darwinian theory? And the answer is, no longer can we support that theory because the tenets don't actually provide for what we observe in nature. There are so many challenges to Darwinian theory that it actually falls. Unfortunately, as mentioned earlier, people confuse the theory of evolution with the mechanism of evolution. So if someone challenges Darwin, they are thought to be challenging evolution. Well, I am challenging Darwin, but I'm not challenging evolution. I firmly believe in evolution, but I believe that it occurs not in a random, haphazard process. That I believe evolution is more or less in line with the work that Lamarck said, that organisms and their environment are in a lockstep interaction. This is exactly the information that we described in the earlier part of the presentation of how cells respond to that environment and how they can change their genetics. Well, the interesting thing is this. If evolution is fractal in its nature, then we might actually know where we are in that evolutionary scheme by reviewing other evolutions that occurred in the biokingdom. So, for example, since humanity represents all humans as cells forming a larger living thing called humanity, that's the living organism, then it would say that humanity is, in a sense, an animal. And if we understand that, then we can go back in evolution, say, if we review the evolution of animals on this planet, can we get information to identify where we are in the evolution of the animal called humanity? So in this regard, we can go back and say, well, how did animals evolve? Well, there were two phases, the invertebrate and the vertebrate phase. For the particular presentation right now and the shortness of it, I will just really discuss the evolution from the vertebrate level. All of us are familiar with that. The most primitive vertebrates are fish. And then later they evolved into amphibians, and amphibians left the water and got on land. And then amphibians later evolved into reptiles, and reptiles even turned into the large dinosaurs. But from the reptile lineage came two other kinds of organisms, birds and mammals. And this is the sequence of evolution, fish, amphibians, reptiles, dinosaurs, birds, and mammals. The question is this, is the human evolution, the evolution of humanity, in any way self-similar to the evolution of vertebrates? And I find that I believe it is so. For if I go back to the earliest cultures that we call maricultures, these were the equivalent of the fish people, in that they lived on the ocean, they communicated across the ocean, they traveled across the seas and populated all the lands, but they lived at the edge, they lived at the water, they lived by the water. They were connected to the water for their survival. So the earliest maricultures were actually the equivalent of fish who could not leave the water themselves. However, fish gave rise to amphibians, and amphibians took the water with them onto the land. And when that happened in human civilization, that would be the advent of agriculture. Because with agriculture, we were able to go into the dry land, bring the water to there, or dig the water from under the ground. We started to be able to recognize we were no longer linked to the ocean, but we could penetrate deep into the land. So agriculture represented the amphibian phase, where human civilization reached the point of its evolution that it was no longer restricted to the edge and could penetrate deep into the land. And for the longest part of our history, we were an agrarian society. And then we jumped. And the jump was from amphibians to reptiles. But what are reptiles in regard to amphibians? Well, think about this. If you see in reptiles, they're like digital machines. They click their heads, they click their eyes, their tongues dart. They're just exactly the same as a machine. And in fact, the dinosaurs were later called killing machines. That reptiles were the highest mechanistic form of human life. And that they became absolute terrors on this planet because of that machinery. And the interesting thing about reptiles as machinery, that would then suggest that when humans evolved into what we call the industrial age, they started to enter into the reptilian period of human society, that the industrial age, the mechanized age, was a reflection of the reptiles. And the interesting thing about it is that the industrial age is fueled by essentially what we refer to as the blood of the dinosaurs, fossil fuel. And it's so a very interesting fact that the character of our civilization is really relayed to the character of the fuel of which we fire our civilization, that we are connected to the dinosaurs, that we're using dinosaurian energy to energize our current civilization. And the interesting thing about reptiles, they provided us with some very interesting information. Reptiles were indeed the marvels of the mechanistic biology. That, imagine this, you could have a small lizard, let's say a 5-inch lizard, and that on this little tiny hind leg of a 5-inch lizard, we could see a movement, and I can tell you the movement on that leg is due to 10 muscle cells in this lizard firing in response to a single nerve, so that the movement of the leg of this 5-inch lizard is due to 10 muscle cells being controlled by a single nerve. What was interesting about reptiles is that nature, once catching the pattern, recognized it could take the same pattern and blow it up. So a 5-inch reptile could be actually made into a 50-foot reptile, and the same pattern would exist. And yet, in the larger animal, when that hind leg lifts, it obviously, because of its mass, takes more than 10 muscles to move it. It may take 10 million muscles. But here's the interesting understanding about that. While the same movement occurs in the leg, and the former 5-inch animal was 10 muscles, and in the 50-foot animal, it's 10 million muscles, in both animals, it only takes one nerve cell to fire those muscles. So as dinosaurs got bigger and bigger and bigger, and their bodies started to get more massive and massive, their brains actually didn't get big at all. And the reason is this: they used the same small brain to fire the same mechanism that was just blown up from the smaller animal. Well, how does that relate to the world that we live in? Well, think of the industrial age as providing for businesses. At first, all the businesses were small. But then the businesses started to get bigger and bigger, and then they started to turn into corporations, and corporations started to represent the dinosaurs. They were big, massive structures. And just like the dinosaurs, they had small amount of awareness, but a large number of people working for them. And so, in a sense, like the dinosaurs had small brains and massive bodies. Think about this. In a dinosaur, the brain is awareness, and the body is administration. If the brain wants something, the body carries it out. Now we take that image to our corporate structures and recognize this. As the businesses got bigger, the awareness stayed small, but the administration got more and more massive. That's the dinosaurian part. Well, the interesting thing is dinosaurs lasted for a long time, but they ultimately fell. And the reason why they fell? There was not enough awareness in their tiny brains to manage their big bodies when the environment turned unstable. And as a result, the brain could not control that massive administration that it was supporting, and the dinosaurs fell over and died. And the interesting thing is, in recent years, we're beginning to find this true of some of the very large corporations in our world, that they're starting to fall under. And the reason is that their structure, their bodies filled with administrators, is not being supported by the tiny intelligence that constitutes their awareness. But before the dinosaurs died out, they actually gave rise to two different kinds of species that appeared, birds and mammals. So as we talk about the industrial age being our reptilian equivalent, we'd have to say, well, then, what about the bird phase? And the answer to that is remarkably simple and numerous in regard to the fact that the bird phase represents the Wright brothers. The Wright brothers took human civilization off the ground through the age of aviation. And birds were different than the dinosaurs in this regard. Well, dinosaurs could only see what was straight in front of them and occasionally would walk into the tar pits just because they couldn't see them. Birds had a different understanding. Birds flew above the world. And flying above the world, birds expressed a perception of the world that dinosaurs couldn't get. And it was interesting because when we go back to human civilization and say, what was the bird phase? And we recognize that's when Wilbur and Orville Wright took us off the ground. And we say, yes, birds started flying and the flight changed the planet as we knew it. It connected all of the lands and all of the people. So in hours, you could fly from one side of the world to the other side of the world. And this was all brought about by aviation. Aviation profoundly changed the organization of civilization. However, the fullest evolution of aviation did markedly change the world we live in, because the fullest evolution of aviation was when we landed on the moon. That's when the birds left the planet and got to the moon. And the significance about that landing on the moon is that it represents, A, the highest peak of evolution of the avian part of our evolution, but it also did this. When the astronauts landed on the moon, they took a picture of the Earth from that distance. And for the first time, when we got those pictures back on Earth, people saw ourselves as that little blue-green gem suspended in the darkness of space. And with that image, for the first time, with a perspective provided by the birds that flew above, humans saw who they are, where they are in the place of space, that they were on this little tiny gem of a planet. And this was in 1969. And what did this picture seed? It started seeding the thought that maybe we should start taking care of this planet because this is all we have. We should start taking care of the water. We should start taking care of the land. We should start taking care of the air. Interesting point. taking care means nurturing. And the last level of evolution of vertebrates are mammals, and the character of mammals are nurturers. So it was interesting that we've gotten to the point in our evolution where the birds have manifested their evolution, mammals have been seeded into this world. But the mammals, the people who want to take care of the planet, represent the meek in the world that we live in today. But it's very interesting because in the day that the dinosaurs were here, there actually was a period where there were the dinosaurs, there were birds, and there were mammals all at the same time. And yet, when the environment went completely unstable, the dinosaurs fell off and died and disappeared. And then it was up to the mammals, the meek, for they inherited the earth. And it's an interesting time where we are right now because there's a struggle, a life and death struggle going on this planet. And we have lost our way. And we're being ruled by corporations. We're being ruled by dinosaurs. And there's a very important difference between dinosaurs and mammals in regard to their neurological development. Dinosaurs are conscious and mammals are self-conscious. The difference between them? A conscious individual does what they need to do today because they see it happening right now and they're going to do something, whatever it is, right now. It's immediately in front of them. Mammals think differently. When it's a problem confronting them, they think of the solution, but they think of the solution based on what are the consequences of that solution for the future. And it's interesting because if you look at the world we live in, we're being run by oil corporations, the carriers of the blood of the dinosaur. They're still running the corporation. We're being run by corporations that can't see down the street, that they live for the moment, destroy the planet around us. They are not self-conscious entities. It is the meek, the mild people, the new people, the people like you who are listening to this kind of information that constitute the evolution of civilization. For once we start to acquire the character of mammals and employ that and start taking care of our planet, then the extinction we're facing now will be reversed and we can return this planet back to the garden. But it will require the fall of the reptiles. And yet, they're falling on their own right now. So this is a very interesting understanding because we're not going blindly into the future. We know where we're going. We're going to leave behind the type of corporate, relentless and reckless driven structure by corporations and get into a softer, nurturing, more supporting world provided by mammals. And the interesting thing is we're in that flux right now, and yet it's a very immediate reaction because in a very, very short time, this evolutionary step is going to happen. The dinosaurs will fall, the mammals will take over, the earth will recede itself, the earth will recover the glory of the garden that it once was, humanity will complete itself, for we will recognize that when we fight other people, we're fighting ourselves, that humanity is a single body containing cells where each one of us is a cell in that structure. And think about killing other people in this way. What structures in your body do you want to kill? Which ones do you want to get rid of? And you start to realize, well, I really like all of them. They provide for the life that I have. And the reality is, when we understand that we should stop killing each other and start organizing ourselves into those social structures that reflect what's going on in the human body, that the cell will be complete. And that cell is the earth itself. The earth is a living cell. And interestingly enough, then what is our role in that living cell? And all of a sudden you step back and realize, why, we are the proteins in the cell membrane. We are the proteins on the surface of the earth that receive the signals from the environment and then engage in the behaviors that control the expression of the planet. We have lost that mission statement. The aboriginals that are still here remind us we are the gardeners. And all we've done to this point is devastate that garden. But as we evolve and we lose the reptiles behind, and as we start to recognize that our consciousness and our self-consciousness means that we must organize our lives now to plan for the future, we will have a whole different experience on this planet. When the planet is complete, it will be an individual living cell. And according to the fractal imagery, what does that mean? And the answer is, every time a level completes itself, it hooks up with other like entities to create a social structure from those entities that will reflect the pattern of the more primitive structures. So as the Earth completes its evolution as a single cell, I anticipate at that time that we will then begin to interact with other Earths, other cells out in space, and that we will start to create a large matrix of living cells as planets that constitute the universe. So in conclusion, in this very brief foray into what I call fractal evolution, we have great hope and possibility before us, not the fear and the struggle for life as suggested by Darwinian theory. Fractal evolution, based on the work of Lamarck, based on the work of Timothy Lenton, reveals that we are living in a very supportive garden, a garden that should support all of us, where all of us can enjoy life in peace, prosperity, and happiness. I hope you find that. Thank you.
This concludes The Wisdom of Your Cells with Dr. Bruce Lipton. Music by Stephen McNamara. Thank you for listening.